Hi there, it's Amy Guth, host on WGN Radio.
And I'm Rex Hupke, a terrible columnist with the Chicago Tribune.
Discourse is at an all-time high in this country, and we're very civilized, and we're thoughtfully...
Shut up, Amy!
We're thoughtfully having conversations.
Stop it!
Where... Cram it! Shut up right now!
For God's sake!
I swear to God, I will go over...
Punch you!
You! So, in a civilized way, let us take a look at what's happening in political headlines right now. Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Guth and Hupke on Politics. I'm Amy Guth, that there is Rex Hupke, and as ever, we have lots and lots of things to talk about. Since we last spoke, we did some live radio, and we managed to not swear for 2 hours on the air, which was very exciting.
Not a single one. It was impressive.
I said hell, and that was it.
That doesn't even count anymore, I don't think.
No, as compared to what we say here.
It's a place. It's where we presently are.
Right. The seventh layer of it, anyway. Indeed. And as ever, a week goes by and we have many things that have befallen us between shows of this fine production. So as we speak right now, people are arriving for a North Korea briefing. And so if anything happens during the course of the show, we'll just talk about that. Even though by the time the show is up, people will have already known and tweeted to us about it. But nonetheless,
Breaking podcast news.
That is the thing that's happening. We're going to talk a little bit about the 100 days because that's the thing that's happening. We're going to talk about the wall. We're going to talk about taxes. Probably a little bit about Ivanka. Probably a little bit about Trump. Probably a little about Spicer because that's what we do.
Spicy.
Awesome. We didn't even plan that.
Everybody loves saying spicy is just fun to say.
I know.
No matter what it's attached
to. I've even
to.
Gone so far to say spicy spice a couple times.
Spicy spice. Nice.
Then it's, you know, endearing.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would like to also discuss some comments that happened. So yesterday, there was a during the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony at the Capitol, Trump said something, and we've said all along, if he says something, you know, if he says the right thing, we're gonna say so. We're gonna, you know. Yeah. And the comments were, but hear me out, because there's a but attached to this. There's always a but, and I got a but. Take that out of context, Nick DiGilio. Mm-hmm. So he says, we pledge never again, which is a phrase that was widely used after World War II by a lot of Jewish leaders. Mm-hmm. He said, we must never shrink away about telling the truth about evil in our time. We know that in the end, good will triumph over evil. I would love to know who wrote that, because that does not sound like him at all.
No, it does not.
So he went on to say that those who deny the Holocaust are complicit in it. I've never heard him use the word complicit before, which is fascinating.
He does not know what that means.
He does not know what that means. He can't spell unprecedented.
Yeah.
I know that he does not know what that means.
Complacit.
But the statement that's kind of ringing out around the world right now, or at least around the country, is that he said the phrase, confront anti-Semitism. And there were Holocaust survivors in the audience. He said that phrase, which is what we've wanted, like that's what we expect and need and all that. But look, here's the thing. Your entire administration does all this super weird, subtle anti-Semitic crap. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to need you to, here's the but that I was describing. I'm going to need you to do more than just say that. Clearly not a thing he wrote. Clearly not remarks he would say. Those are not words he says.
No, definitely not.
Because otherwise it would have been confront, you know, bigly or something. He wouldn't have done that. He would not have done that. However, there's a piece on the Forward that is really, really important. It is written by Sam Kestenbaum. I recommend you Google it. You read it. The headline says it all, and that is alt-right slams Trump's Holocaust speech as appease the Jews' betrayal.
Oofa.
Yeah, that's where we're at with that.
You can always count on those guys. If there's one thing that the alt-right Nazis or whatever you want to call them.
That sounds like ice cream.
I guess I probably shouldn't be making that sound light and fun.
No, you should not.
But anyway, they're always good for taking something and then making it 1,000 times worse and dreadful. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So on the Daily Stormer, which I still think sounds more Star Wars than neo-Nazi, but nonetheless, the Daily Stormer, a reporter, pontificator, whatever.
Like
a dude.
Ass man 75.
No, there's a byline. Not worth even saying his name, is what I'm going to say
don't.
About that.
Yeah,
so he wrote, "You can never appease the Jews. Give them an inch and they want a mile. The only way to deal with them is to ignore them and or tell them to shut their filthy mouths." Isn't that nice? You seem nice.
People like this still exist. You know, that's what's...
I know. It is 2017.
I mean, what the hell? What kind of a dumbass loser are you?
Well, the Nazi variety.
Right.
Is what?
Yeah. Because I don't even know... Sometimes if these people are actually truly as hateful as they sound, they're just such complete losers that they have to cling to. This is like the only club that would allow them in, sort of. And,
oh, yeah.
And so they buy into this crap and they spout it without, in some cases, I don't think without even thinking about it. But, oh, God. Anyways.
He went on to say
that
he was kind of talking about the turnaround. And he said that months ago, Trump was, quote, "a man who knew how the Jews operate and as a man with enough self-respect to not be publicly humiliated by them by bowing to their every whim and demand." He went on to say that we, my people, the Jews, quote, "have their rat-like claws deep in him now." Isn't that nice?
God, I mean, it's unbelievable.
And of course, David Duke had to weigh in, you know.
As he does.
He tweeted something about Jewish privilege, which is awesome. Why is the so-called Holocaust the only atrocity to receive its very own, and then he puts, like, in quotes, "remembrance proclamation"? Jewish privilege.
Wait, he so-called the Holocaust?
So-called the Holocaust.
Oh, my God. I knew he was an anti-Semite, but I actually didn't realize he was, like,
also
a
Holocaust
denier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus.
And that is the first time in my entire Jewish life I have ever heard the phrase Jewish privilege.
Yes.
And I think you just logged on to mylessjewishnerve.org with that one. Yeah. And he kept going. "Do you not have any power? Why are you surrounding yourself with the enemies of the American people?" What? Lord have mercy. There we are. I mean, you know.
But you're right, though, because the thing is that he's not. I mean, he's saying that, and I'm delighted to see these knuckleheads getting angry about it.
Yeah.
Because anything that agitates them, fine.
Yeah.
But.
Although, I mean, yes and no. I mean, on one hand, yes, get agitated. On the other hand, that makes them blow stuff up.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it in that, right,
you know,
to that
so
degree.
That.
But, you know, just...
I hear you.
I want them to be unhappy somehow.
Sure. But, yeah. I'm with you on that.
And hopefully have bad acid reflux or something like that.
I wish you heartburn.
Yes. Exactly. That's about as far as I can go because I'm generally a nice person.
Sure, sure.
But, I mean, Bannon's still sitting back there defiling the White House with his presence, and so yeah, I don't think his words mean squat. And they rarely do, and this is another example in a broader sense of the problems that he has with his, given the platform that he's risen on, and the thing, just the multitude of things he has said, he has zero credibility on this front. He has zero credibility when it comes to women's issues, which, you know, Ivanka was trumpeting.
Oh,
it's like, come on.
That audience reaction was so good. And they start just booing and, like, you can just hear this, like,
rabble, rabble.
Everybody's mad in the audience because she's like, he's so great with women's issues. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
Ivanka.
I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd on his face. And we can get into that later. I don't want to change subjects. But yeah, I mean, he's a really flawed leader just, you know, again,
surrounding himself with overt and subtle anti-Semites.
Exactly. So how the hell can you come out and speak about anti-Semitism and have a grain of credibility? And anybody, and again, it's not being anti, I'm not saying this as an anti-Trump person, it's just the facts. I mean, when you talk and you embrace this kind of thing for so long, you can't just pivot and be like, oh, okay, everything's fine now.
No.
It just doesn't
work. You absolutely cannot. Not when, and we've talked about this before, during the waves of bomb threats, when little children were being led out of daycares under, you know, threat, and adults around them were working very hard so that they would not be terrified.
Mm-hmm.
He did not say anything for a very long time.
Right.
After the very first damn one, he should have. That's when you say, we will confront anti-Semitism and we will not stand for this. But that's not what happened. He was very quiet for a long time and even totally blew his stack at that reporter that stood up, who was so sweetly said, yeah, you know, said like, you're there, Zadie. It was so cute. Like, he was talking. I mean, that's a cute word anyway, but it's cute. He's like bringing up the Yiddish word for grandfather. You're there, Zadie. And he, thank you. And then, like, sit down. Like, I'm not a... Bleh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, good that he said these things.
Good that he said these things.
I don't buy it for a second, personally. But
yes,
but if he now moves forward and starts doing things and taking steps and saying other things,
great,
along these lines, hey, okay, then that's
and,
how you...
And getting rid of the company he's keeping.
Yes, right. And that's how you build. I mean, you can... As big a complete and utter disaster as the beginning of this administration has been on so many different fronts, it is not impossible to mend some fences and to start to rebuild certain areas and that sort of thing. I'm not saying that it's ever going to excuse everything, but,
right,
but certainly there are areas where you can become, you know, better and you know, you can become trustworthy and believable, but it requires follow through.
It requires follow through. And like with anything, like if you like lie to your partner or your neighbor or your friend or whatever, and you have a change of heart, you still have to mend that with them.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, oh, well, I'm, you know, no longer going to do that egregious behavior that infuriated you. I'm cool. We cool. We good.
Right.
No, no. Well, you've got to earn my trust back. That's the thing about trust. Once it is shattered, it you have to rebuild it. And nonetheless, like, I remember when I was very little, someone said something about, like, it's a vase. And if trust breaks, you can glue it back together, but it's still going to always have a crack. You have to, you know, it's very precious. You always have to tell the truth. And I was like, okay, I get that. And I was like five. That made sense to me then.
Yeah.
Like, makes sense now. The full statement, though, where he says we will confront anti-Semitism is so bizarre to me because it, A, as I said, does not sound like him at all. But it's just, let me read to you. He says, this is my pledge to you. We're going to start there. We will confront anti-Semitism. We will stamp out prejudice. We will condemn hatred. We will bear witness and we will act. As president of the United States, I will always stand with the Jewish people and I will always stand with our great friend and partner, the State of Israel. Let's set the Israel part aside for a minute because that's kind of its own deal. And there's plenty of Jews that, just like there are Americans that struggle with this country, like, mm-hmm, there are plenty of Jews that also struggle. Like, nobody is all completely in on any country. So let's set Israel aside for a minute. Let's open with, this is my pledge to you, because, you know, he put out that, as we discussed on the air on Saturday evening, he put out the, you know, contract with the American people about his 100 days, and he ain't done shit on that. So
his pledges don't have a very high value at the moment.
Yeah. Your pledges are wearing a little thin on me there, guy. So I don't give a damn about him,
right,
saying pledge. I don't care.
Yeah. And again, that's the problem when you are dishonest.
Yeah.
That you, I don't buy, you know, I mean, there's no one thing he can say that I'm going to buy.
No.
Again, it's got to be backed up and, you know, there are many steps. That vase must be repaired, as
indeed
you said.
Well, so, and the first question is, great, we will confront anti-Semitism, we will stamp out prejudice, and we will condemn hatred, we will bear witness, and we will act. Okay, tell me what are the verbs? Like,
right,
what are we going to do? How? Mm-hmm. Tell me how. Tell me that it's, I mean, as like hate crime definitions are being tweaked to not include certain kinds of hate crimes,
mm-hmm,
where if you, I mean, there's a difference if somebody goes to a non-Jewish household and like sets it on fire, it's just arson. If someone comes to a Jewish household, puts a swastika on there and sets it on fire, it is a hate crime. It is arson committed in the name of hatred,
mm-hmm,
and it's very different, and it carries with it different penalties. So I'm not comfortable tweaking hate crime language. So anyway, that's where we're at, and all the neo-Nazis are so mad. Oh, they are so mad.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. They were a little, you know, they had some bees in their bonnet over the weekend. I got into it with a couple of fine individuals on Twitter, because there was a story about how the Trump sons went, they went hunting prairie dogs,
mm-hmm,
and it's like prairie dog mating season. So, and there's something about this particular kind of prairie dog that, like, if you shoot it, when a bullet hits it, it explodes. And I was like, well, that's just gross. And there's something the matter with you if you find that entertaining. And I tweeted that, and I said, gosh, the part where, you know, prairie dogs, it is well documented. They have a very sophisticated language, and they have even protected each other with their own bodies. Like, they'll throw a body in front of someone. They have, like, a very sophisticated social system. And I tweeted something about that. I was like, oh, the part about them protecting each other just made me want to cry, which I think is a pretty, like, okay human thing to say.
Sure.
Because that's a creature that clearly is a sentient being over there, you know. Yeah. And some people got a hold of that tweet, and there was lots of, like, snowflake stuff thrown at me. Lots of snowflake. Like, one guy, his profile said he was a veteran, and I was like, you know what? As the child of a combat veteran, I expect much more honorable behavior out of a soldier. Yeah. He didn't like that very much, so he, like, sicked a bunch of people on me. Great. Which is pretty fun. And this one woman was just like, well, oh, you're a hypocrite. You kill rats and mice in your house. And I was like, well, no, I keep my shit pretty clean, so I don't have rats in my house, you weirdo. Like, what's wrong with you? So I was like, no, I find your rudeness appalling, and I do not have rodents in my home. And she just kept on and kept on. She's like, oh, you know what? Life is rude. How's that? And it was like, in all caps, was saying, life's not fucking fair, and you're rude, and just went totally nuts about it. And I was like, what in the world? And so I looked at their timelines. Here's where I'm going with this. Both of them had tweeted either the hashtag or the phrase, make America great again, within the last 24 hours prior to doing that. So one of them, I just, like, retweeted her ass and just said, making America great, like, here we go. And it's so fascinating to me how someone who is willing to say, I want this country to be, you know, a pleasant place and full of good virtues as deemed by them, who could go so overtly, like, it's a prairie dog that we're talking about, and your first interaction with me was insulting me. You insulted a total stranger who retweeted the shit out of you to 15,000 people. But like, this strange kind of ready, fire, aim, sort of vibe, which I bring up because I'm seeing that too with really disgusting shit on Twitter right now with anti-Semitism just in the last few hours over this thing, because I think they're all pissed off. They feel like they're, you know, their buddy has what was the phrase? I've got my claw. What? We've sunk our claws in him. That's the craziest shit I remember in my life.
Yeah.
But like, they feel like we, the Jews, have gotten to Trump and somehow persuaded him to come around and be sympathetic to us. First of all, no.
You know, that's a talk about snowflakes, first of all, I guess. Talk about a sort of an ideology that is a victimhood.
Yeah.
Because they will never, I mean, if you're wrapped up in that, it will never be okay. You know, I mean, you are always getting screwed over by the Jews. And if you're not, you have lost your identity. You know what I mean? And I think that's a large part of the sort of psychosis with people like this, is that they have to have that. So they have to find, whether it's the same with, like, anti-government people.
Sure.
You know, the government is always evil. And even when the government does something good briefly, it becomes evil after the fact because of, you know, it's always conspiratorial and that sort of thing. So I think that's a big problem with them. And then with some folks, I think the Make America Great Again diehards, I think we have to start asking the question of what does it mean to be an American, and also what does it mean to be great? Because I don't think we're all on the same page
either
of those things mean.
And if you boil down a lot of what they're talking about, even people who might not realize it or might not be intelligent enough to distill information or think critically about the big picture, a lot of the times what you're talking about is white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this again shit? We're gonna turn things back over to the Native Americans from whom we stole all this land. Right. That's the only answer I'm gonna take. Right. If you're gonna put the word again in there. And what, you know, as leading up to the election, there was a ton of people interviewing people, asking them, like at the RNC, people were like, what does that mean again? When was it great? I think it was like Daily Show or somebody was walking around doing that. And they were like, Revolutionary War time?
Yeah, like, all right.
You're shitting me?
Well, all that is a brand, the Make America Great Again. It's a slogan.
It's a slogan. It's like just do it.
Yeah, because a lot of the times the the people that think, when they think, oh, make America great again, that means like my life is going to be so much better, and they are completely disconnected from the fact that the brunt of what is going to happen is actually not going to make their lives better. They might lose their health care. They may lose different kinds of subsidies. They may lose different kinds of support.
It's so people attaching, either because they're caught up in it due to an emotional appeal, and they're perfectly intelligent people, or it's people that lack the intelligence to think critically and are just attaching themselves to something as bandwagonism.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't think most of the Make America Great Again zealots are actually stopping to think about what it means to be American or to be great. And I think if everybody could kind of put on the brakes and just tone, you know, just be
like, we need to define that.
Right. And I'm talking left and right. I mean, everybody stop yelling for, you know, a day.
That's not going to happen.
I know. But sit back and let's figure this out, because, you know, we are going to reach a point here. I'm sorry, I'm shooting off on a tangent a little
bit.
That's
all right.
But we're going to reach a point here where this can no longer just be oppositional. You know, I mean, we cannot continue, right now, people on the left are fighting battles every day because of what's happening with the Trump administration. But at some point, we have to kind of step back and figure out who we are and what we want to be and what it means, like I said, to be. Let's take Make America Great Again back, in a sense, and say, okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to be great? And what does it mean to be an American? And does it mean to, you know, work together to prosper, to make our country as good as it can be, to help people, to lift all ships, kind of thing? And then, so you think about that and you put all of the ideology aside, because, you know, again, this kind of comes down to certain connections. You know, the media took so much crap for not, like, really getting out and understanding Trump voters. And now I think the media is trying to overcompensate by constantly going back to Trump voters who are now,
you know what I'm going to say about, like, the M word.
The disappointed. I know. Sorry. I was talking fast. But
fast and loose.
Although in that case, frankly, it really was the media at large. I mean, there wasn't like, it wasn't like it was a few public. I mean,
that's,
you know, there were,
yeah,
a lot,
fair,
of people. So, haha, I'm right.
Okay. Like that.
Whew, dodged a bullet. But this isn't just like, you know, Trump voters versus resistance people. You know, this has to just, we have to start being human a little bit and saying,
well,
like,
I don't think we're gonna. I think it's, I,
okay.
I don't. I think it's gonna get worse before it gets better. I think just, I was thinking about this yesterday because a week ago, I walked out of my house and took three steps and a man screamed something at me from a car. And yesterday I got onto the train and a man said something super gross to me. And I was like, and I tweeted it, because I do. And somebody sent me a direct message and was kind of asking, like, wow, why is all this shit happening to you? And it was a dude. And I was like, well, I mean, that's just being female. But also, yeah, there is an uptick, because I think we're in this, like, that's there is a ripple of this volatile time. And some of it is about not feeling, it's like a rebellious act against this sense of feeling stifled by what they believe is political correctness. And you know what I'm going to say about that. And that is simply switch the phrase out for treating people with respect. Mm. And you will, you know. But I think when we talk about Make America Great Again, I think what a lot of folks that get on board with it jump on is like this 50s ideal. Well, let's look at the shit that was happening in the 50s. Major league white male supremacy. Big time.
Right.
Lots of very structured gender and racial and class roles. And why in the holy shit would you aspire to go back to that?
Yeah.
Is my question to you.
Right. Because everybody thinks it was great. Every white person think, well, not everybody.
Right.
You,
like,
know what I mean?
Right. It's these, like, people, a sense of like, it was a better time. You could speak freely. No, you couldn't.
Right.
No.
And even for white people, I mean, they think it was, but you know, it wasn't. I mean, it was better in, I guess, if you're a white male.
If you're an affluent white man.
Right. But
if you're an affluent white Christian man.
Right. But there were plenty of closeted white men who suffered mightily because you couldn't be gay and you couldn't, you know, you couldn't come out as gay. And so all kinds of stuff like that. So it's nonsense to paint that as, like, you know, some, even for white people, as some, like, great, wonderful time. It just was what it was. I mean, you know, and you had a lot of people that were alcoholics and idiots and, you know, dying of cancer and, you know.
Like, sure. But you couldn't, but you didn't talk about that shit. Like, that's the thing. So we had, like, we raised we raised a generation of people that are completely fucked up emotionally, right? And like can't talk about their damn feelings, particularly men, because of like what the definition of masculinity was. And like, God forbid, like a man from that era have a damn feeling and express it, right? Like, that's just why the shit would we go there? Yeah. Why would we do that? I don't aspire to that. No. I want no part of that. I will resist that structure as long as I live.
You know what? I don't know. I hope it's okay we dive in this direction. But
sure, man.
Today, and I thought this struck me as so telling of the problem with so many men right now in the workplace in particular, but in life, I guess, in general, along the lines of what you're talking about. Jesse Waters, who was on Fox News, who was sort of like this dippy underling of Bill O'Reilly, who now, of course, now with O'Reilly out, his cred has risen or something. And so he's on this Fox News show this morning, and he's talking about, they were showing video of Ivanka Trump at this summit she was speaking at in Germany. And he's talking about her, and he makes some comment about, oh, I like the way she holds that microphone.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, what's
wrong with you?
And it was just, and nobody seemed to notice until, of course, everybody in the world saw it and was like, what's the matter with you, man?
Right.
But this is what I thought.
And then
you
kind of try to backpedal, and a bunch of appendix jumping. I'm like, he wasn't talking about fellatio. Yes, he was.
Right. I mean, he tried to say, oh, no, she has like a smooth jazz DJ voice.
And
I'm like, bullcrap.
No,
I mean, you're full of it, man. I was like, nobody buys that for a second. You were talking about blowjobs, period.
Right.
Okay. And you took a brief clip of, you know, a woman giving a speech and made a dick joke out of it. And, and you know, it's like, but the problem with that, that's a problem just on its face, no matter who the woman is. But look, this is Fox News, and you're just making that joke about President Trump's daughter, who you guys are in President Trump's camp so much, it's ridiculous. So that tells me that you made that comment without even the slightest thought. That was a reflexive, like, bro speak, nonsense comment.
Which means that is hardwired into your damn being.
Exactly. So this is the kind of sexism that's baked in so much in some of these guys. And that's a problem, and that's what people, and so they don't recognize, and they say, oh, you're being too sensitive, or you're
snowflake,
blah, blah, blah. Right? And it's like, no, screw you. I mean, you're being a jackass.
You said something about a blowjob,
right?
And you were referring to, like it or not, someone who's an official part of the damn White House and related to the president. Either one,
and even if she wasn't, it would still be horrible. But the point is that, like, what it showed me was, again, the fact that they never say anything negative about Donald Trump or his family. And he just comes off and says this, shows that this was just like, bleh, you know, it's just coming out automatically. Yeah. And that's awful. I mean, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that has to stop. But I just thought that was a really just spoke volumes to
totally agreed.
The problem with harassment and everything in the workplace and outside of the workplace.
Our very favorite Twitter user and super fan. she tweeted something. I retweeted this. She tweeted, she got a screen grab of a, and this is, oh, no, you twiddn't.
Oh, no, she twiddn't.
I'm sorry. Oh, no, she twiddn't. Yeah. I wasn't looking at her name. I was looking at the screen grab of the thing. She tweeted out a screen grab of that she grabbed that said how women can, it's a headline, how women can prevent sexual harassment at work. Why is that shit, why is that on me?
Yeah.
I got a way women can prevent sexual harassment at work. Don't have men that sexually harass them.
Right.
Like, it's the same thing of, like, don't wear a short skirt when you go out because you might get raped. No, don't rape.
Right.
Done. We're done here.
Yeah.
That's it. So she says, what she added to it, she was better headline, how men can continue to blame the victim and not take responsibility for their own disgusting actions. Much better and much more accurate.
Yeah.
There's all that crap. Like, you're exactly right, Rex, that there is this just awful cultural, I don't know. I was talking with a friend the other day about, I don't know how to say this, but like how it's so pushed upon us, how we're so socialized to, you know, take care of to avoid upsetting men in a larger social context, even interpersonally. Like this friend of mine was saying, she was struggling with saying something to her partner and was like, I don't know. I don't want to upset him. And then realized what she said. And she was like, I've been crying for 2 days about this. I just need to get real and just tell him. She goes, holy shit, I hate when I catch myself being socialized. I'm like, yeah, totally. And it is that. I mean, I think we're even in the workplace, you know, like don't be that that woman who's always like the loud, angry woman, always like beating the feminist drum. Why not? Because I'm sitting in a room full of men. I have my place at the table and none of you give a shit and you're making blowjob jokes if I have even anything a little bit phallic in front of me. So go fuck yourselves. Actually.
Yeah, reasonable.
I'm feeling the feels today. I'm like all shook up with the sass.
You're kind of upsetting me a little bit. So
I'm gonna like redirect my feelings because I don't want Rex to get upset.
Yes, thank you.
Also, you know what? We have gotten so far into the show. We have gotten almost a half hour into the show and not mentioned that it is the First Lady's birthday today.
Oh, yay. Happy birthday.
I would like to say that if my romantic partner tweeted out the image that Trump tweeted out, I would be a little hurt, and I would think that perhaps he did not care about me very much.
there are many reasons to think that Donald Trump does not care about her very much, but
right. Maybe if I were her, I might be looking for an out.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like it's a strange graphic that, you know, he just tweeted. He was like, it's the First Lady's birthday. But it's a graphic. It's a picture of them on Inauguration Day. And she's got that, like, very beautiful periwinkle suit that she had on. Mm-hmm. And it just says something like, it's birthday of FLOTUS. Not like, you know, I feel like any time that we have seen, like, genuine moments of romantic sweetness and like, moments of even looks and things like that between presidents and first ladies before.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't none of that.
Oh, God, no. It's as icy as can be. Yeah.
And it was very much like, I'm putting this graphic that my graphic designer made. I'm just going to tweet this.
Well, it's also worth noting, really, that how it's framed, he's in the middle.
Absolutely.
And slightly in the forefront, and she's just kind of off to the side waving.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to honor a woman on her birthday by tweeting a photograph of her, perhaps she should be the only fucking person in that photograph.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, yeah. No, that is odd. I had not really thought
And I think
about
it would be totally appropriate for a president to say something to her. I mean, he tagged her in the tweet.
Right.
Like,
yes. FYI.
Like, it's okay to say, like, I love you, or, yeah, or address her directly, maybe even use her name or something. I don't think that would be unprofessional for him to say, for a president. I feel like, I don't know, I would have to verify this, but I feel like Obama and Michelle, I think he said things like that. He definitely said, like, on the inauguration, I remember he said something like, Can we all take a minute and look at the, you know, he was like complimenting how beautiful she looked that night. Ain't none of that going on from Trump.
No.
She's probably relieved. She would shudder visibly if he complimented her.
That's true. I think that she, you know, and I can't tell how much of it is that she doesn't like the spotlight on her.
Which could very well be.
And how much of it she just despises him. But I mean,
Lola column A, Lola column B.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But I don't think she's a victim. I think she is complicit in her situation.
Seems that way.
Indeed. If she were to leave him, he would ruin her life, I'm sure, with many resources he has to do so. And he would, you know, there's a child in the mix. There's a lot of, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It, no matter who you are,
yeah,
it is complicated. But if you are, you know, you are also married to the president and you are the first lady and your family is very public, it's even more complicated.
Sure. But I agree with you on her complicitness.
Yeah.
And same with Ivanka. Did you see the John Oliver's piece on Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner on the Last Week Tonight, this past weekend?
I did not, but I saw a lot of people praising it.
Yes. He did as he often does. That show is brilliant, I think, and they take on one big subject each week, and very funny.
Much like the Saturday Night Special hosted
by
Amy Guth.
That is true.
Yep.
Plug. Best show on radio.
Clearly. Besides this one.
They take it, right. They take, you know, just one issue, and they just really dig it. Honestly, it's journalism. It's funny, and it's Daily Show-ish, but it's
And he
it's
doesn't
also,
flinch. Like, he'll
yeah,
get
oh, no.
into this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, he took us apart, and basically was looking at, okay, why do we think Melania and Jared Kushner are going to temper Trump in some way? Why do we think they're a stabilizing force? Why do we think that they're really anything based on what we know? And he kind of eviscerated her with her own words, even, and basically was like, no, you're not any of these. You've shown nothing to demonstrate that you're any of these things. You're just as much of a, you know, noise with no substance as your father. And I'm paraphrasing, he didn't use those words. But so, you know, you get back to just coming off of the complicit Complicitness? God,
sure, let's say sure. Complicitness.
Complicitude.
Complicity?
Complicitetinous.
Strantangery. That's my W for you.
Is, you know, she, I was already kind of on the bubble, and, you know, you're in a weird position, I think, especially as a journalist, but when presidential kids, generally, you kind of, and even family, and, you know, kind of careful with that. We sort of toe around that, dance around it a little bit. But in her case, I mean, she's right there. She's like, you know, top aide to the president and in the White House. And there isn't anything. She hasn't shown anybody anything. She's just nonsense, you know, and everything she says. I mean, she stood up at this. So they dispatch her to Germany at the invitation of Angela Merkel for a women's summit mm-hmm. with the G20. And she goes and has the audacity to stand there and talk about her father's credibility on women's issues.
Nope.
And she was booed and hissed at the thing as well. She should have been, because you know what?
He has none.
Yeah. What are you talking about? I mean, if you're going to go to that and you're going to talk sense, you can talk sense without bringing dad's reputation up.
I would say if I was like her handler, I would say, don't bring up your dad. Talk about your own projects, work, the, you know, the whatever thing you're going to do to help women somewhere in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, talk about that.
Yeah.
Stay on that. If someone derails you from that, go back to it.
Yeah.
And that's what I would tell her if, God forbid, I had the worst job in the world of being her handler.
Oh, God. I can't even imagine. But, yeah, I mean, so I see no evidence at this point that she's anything more than another person there to prop up Trump and to try
Absolutely.
To...
Absolutely. You know, and they've always had a complicated relationship. I mean, he has said some things that I would be like, Dad... Whoa.
Yeah.
If my dad said some of that shit to me, I'd be like, shit is getting weird, Dad. Like,
yeah.
Real weird.
Yeah.
I recognize I look just like Mom, but this is weird.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, though they've had some stuff, but it's like he just wants her around. Let's just call what it is. It's just like nepotism where you give your kid some blow-off dumbass job just to keep them afloat, keep them going. But they don't contribute shit. They, like, you just have them shuffle some papers around. Like, I would love to be wrong. I would love for her to talk some sense in him or do something meaningful. But so far, all she's shown us is that she is a damn shill for him and that she's just there to, you know, try to push his reputation into a positive place. Not going to work.
Yeah, definitely not.
Merkel ain't having that at all.
No, well, I love to throw out little occasional conspiracy theories, but I actually wondered if I'm Angela Merkel, who's brilliant,
yeah,
and who got just this crapo treatment from Trump.
Should we have a handshake? No.
Right. And I wonder if she didn't invite her because she knew she would get mocked. You know what I mean? Like, that just seems like a very passive-aggressive power move to me, you know?
I don't think it's passive-aggressive at all. I think it's actually, it's much better to give someone the rope than to...
Well, that's true, yeah.
Uh-huh. ...fucking punch them in the face yourself.
Right, right.
And then you've thrown them to the court of public opinion and watched them hang themselves.
Yeah.
You have nothing to be sorry about or feel responsible for. You're just like, this person is a dipshit.
Right.
I'm going to give them the room and the space and the audience to completely screw it up. Easy enough.
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, Ivanka didn't. I mean,
she didn't like make a big.
Yeah,
a scandal.
Right? No,
she's
did a perfectly competent job of saying.
She's just full of shit.
Right. It's just that what she says, just like with Dad, and like what we were talking about earlier, is there's just no there
right.
that we can see, and until we start seeing some, it's all just fluff and noise.
Fluff and noise.
Fluff and
that
noise
sounds like a
it's the name of my alt country band. Fluff and noise.
It sounds more polka than alt country. So I just Googled North Korea. And still
out there. We haven't.
People are still arriving. The briefing still.
Okay.
That's a thing. Okay, so let's in the remaining minutes, let us talk about the wall and taxes.
The wall that ain't. the wall that won't be.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it because
the wall.
No, I love what's happening with the wall because. It was so, that was such a huge part of him and his big rallies and the chanting. I was there at the GOP convention and people were like, build the wall.
I forgot you went to that. I forgot.
It was creepy. Build the wall. Build the wall. And who's going to pay for it? Mexico. It's like, uh-uh.
On what planet?
No, right? there's not going to be a wall. There never was going to be a wall.
And
this
if there was going to be a wall, on what planet would Mexico pay for that?
Yeah, no, they've scoffed at that from the get-go. And
sidebar, do you follow former Mexican President Fox on Twitter?
No, but I've seen many of his.
Holy yeah. crap, he's hilarious because he doesn't give a shit, and he'll
not
just be like, "Fuck you and your wall." He doesn't care. He is saying the thing that most of us are thinking.
Yeah,
he's just going there.
I feel like he's saying the thing most Mexicans are thinking too.
Oh god. Sidebar, I don't think we talked about this on the show, but did you see that story a couple weeks ago in which there were a bunch of young, mostly white children from the United States in Mexico on spring break and started chanting, "Build a wall."
No. Cool.
What are you doing?
You guys are cool.
Do you know that Puerto Vallarta is part of Mexico, you dumb shit? Just letting you know. Dumbass.
Oh, God.
I would be mortified if I was one of those parents. But you know what? You're not born thinking that. You learn that.
You do. Absolutely. I mean, because if God help one of my children, if they ever said something like that, I mean, they'd
I'd come to your house and be like, "Yo,
yeah,
Aunt Amy's here to have a sit down with you, child."
I'm gonna knock this top. Yeah,
right, because clearly your dad done screwed up.
But the wall is. They actually were talking about. Oh, the best thing I heard was because now they're. It's also meal. You know, first, like we will because they the we have until Saturday, I believe, to fund the government. They have to come up with a spending agreement.
There's that whole thing.
So
you think we'll have a thing?
They started.
I don't think it's.
I think they're going to extend it and blah 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 and just kind of move on. But
what's
Trump,
the point of a damn deadline if you can just be like, meh, if it's just arbitrary?
We'll extend it.
And like, we'll extend it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it boils down to. But Trump started the. I don't know if it was the week or late last week, saying no. If there's not wall money in that spending bill, we're gonna shut the government down.
Well, he was like shitting himself last week because he realized all the things he promised.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, we're up to the 100-day mark and I ain't done shit, so I better get on it.
But then he backed off that almost immediately. I mean,
100 days, that's stupid. It's arbitrary. You said it, bro, not us.
Right.
That was your thing.
And he's back. I mean, it's kind of striking because I actually did think that the thing he would do as president would be hold his ground on a lot of these annoying things that he wanted to do, personally, annoying to me anyway.
Yeah.
And he's not at all. I mean, you know, so the wall funding, he starts off, there has to be funding in that money in that spending bill for the wall or we're not. But then, you know,
it's
2 days later,
like you should have done your homework before you went and spouted off all that nonsense.
Well, but he's also killing himself because the Democrats at this point, because he backed away from the wall. Now that's off the table for the spending thing. And he backed away from health care previously. They may do something with that this week. But in the previous round, he backed away from that at the last minute. So it's like, the Democrats are just going to be like, he's going to say, well, no, you absolutely have to. And they'll be like, yeah, whatever. I mean, he's losing his credibility because he has. No, in terms of obstinance anyway. You know, like he's showing that he just doesn't have that much backbone when it comes to actually following through on some of these threats he's
making. And now he's got the Nazis mad at him. They think he's flip-flopping.
Oh my gosh, it's a bad times.
I can't stop smiling.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of exciting.
He's opening up wars on other flanks now.
Yeah, and then definitively has said, nope, not releasing the taxes. But here's some new shit for you guys to contend with.
Yeah, their tax plan. Today they read their tax plan was one page. I think they said it was it's roughly 500 words, and they said there was something like 90 people involved in writing it.
A letter to the editor.
Yes,
that's not even an op-ed.
Somebody pointed out that so roughly six or so words per person. Is what it, but what he's proposing is massive tax cuts for rich people like himself and corporations, which we knew was going to come, but. It's not revenue neutral, so like they're going to blow the deficit. I mean, this is so against a lot of what conservatives have, generally preached. And so while they're going to applaud the tax cuts, there's no. I mean, the money's got to. I mean, it just there's a real problem.
It's going to be
there.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah,
so fall out on that one.
So I don't know, but I also saw an early estimation of how much he'll save.
Oh.
And this is, of course, is an estimation because we don't have his taxes, but an estimation of just, the massive amount of money. He'll get I believe it was somewhere above 50% tax cut, basically, under this new plan because of various things. Not to mention the fact that they want to do away with the, inheritance taxes and stuff like that, which, of course, affects super wealthy families like his. But again, everything is so colossally weird and messed up with this that we get run over by it. But the tax thing is a big deal. I mean, he wants to reform the tax code without showing us
his own,
yeah,
and how he would benefit from
doing
so.
Right, and how he would benefit. Like, it's really unconscionable, I think, and it's without precedent, and there is no logical explanation for it whatsoever. At this point, he's just thumbing his nose at everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
Including the people that voted for him, frankly. I mean,
yes.
You know,
and to me, it speaks to even more of his deeply entrenched, I mean, it's beyond just super capitalist. It's with narcissist stuff going on too. I mean, there's so much there that you would be so brazen about just supporting your own financial interests and saving, you know, I think we need to reform entirely our royal hour attitudes around the purpose of a tax anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a lot of people just kind of like, oh, it's, you know, the man, and it's just putting money in the pockets of like, let's really think about, like, we need a little more transparency about where money goes. But that's a check I don't mind writing.
Yeah.
Because I want programs to be supported, and I don't want to shut down, and I don't want, because the people that suffer when that shit gets cut and when that shit has a shutdown and gets bogged up, like whatever the fuck, when it's not funded, are the most vulnerable people in society that need it the most. It's usually people that do not have a great deal of money. It is usually very vulnerable children with special needs and things like that. Like, that's not, we can't screw with the most vulnerable members of our country. We need to support people, all of our citizens, not just the wealthy white male ones.
And all of this is premised on the idea that if you save all of these billionaires and multimillionaires, et cetera, all of this money, or these corporations, all of this money and stuff, that money is going to make its way back into the system and help other
horseshit.
People, and it's going to generate jobs. But
but they don't give
never,
a fuck.
Right. And that's been proven to not happen. I mean, they, you know, you knock the taxes down and they just start saving more money. They don't spend more money.
They hoard wealth.
Right.
They don't redistribute it.
Yeah. And so I
think we saw in Reagan era, trickle down, don't do shit.
Exactly. And I think that there's, you know, a lot of people don't like it because they feel like the government is so inefficient and all that. And there's something.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Totally.
That needs reform, too.
Yes.
For sure.
The money that comes from taxes is not being used in a way that is efficient and you know, good all across the board, not by any stretch. But absent another thing, another way, I mean, what's the, unless you tell corporations, okay, we will drop your taxes, but you have to promise that you're going to donate X amount of money to, you know, this bucket, which is going to be used to help fund, you know, lower income kids or whatever. I mean, just
right. Make sure everybody's got health insurance,
right. That's
or
not,
something.
Yeah. And that's never going to happen. So that's why the government has to do it. It may not do it well, but it does it. And if you take that away, you're going to have a ton of people suffering while the rich people are just more comfortable. And
right.
That's not fair.
Well, and we've made words like welfare into like dirty words that in fact, that's a very important and positive word.
Yeah.
And we've really like demonized that word and even demonized the people who it is there to serve.
Yeah.
That somehow that's about laziness and that's about, you know, stupidity, that poverty is a choice and that, like, please spare me that.
Right.
We have moved way beyond that, but we haven't. We're still in this ridiculous narrative of like this, you know, like the welfare queen kind of narrative. And we're still attached to like, look, No, systemic poverty is not a choice. Why the shit would anyone choose that if it was a choice?
Right.
And it's not about laziness. It's not like that's just, we have major cultural, emotional growth to do. And trickle down does not work. And it does not, when billionaires save, or even just not billionaires, but just affluent people save money, they do not tend to redistribute it.
No.
They tend to support each other and themselves and pass it along, and it becomes generational wealth instead
right.
of redistributed.
And it's not even, you know, I said it's unfair a minute ago, and actually that's not what it is, but more importantly, though, is that it just becomes fundamentally wrong. I mean, and if
yes, it becomes moral at
right,
some point.
Right, exactly. And if you can look at yourself in the mirror knowing that you're hoarding all kinds of wealth and there are people out there suffering, but that's
fully
your
on you,
yeah.
I
that's
guess.
I mean, that's your thing. Okay, fine. But I, you know, most people,
for you to be like, well, it's the poor's own fault, like,
right?
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's a horrible way to think about
Have
it.
Have you
I mean,
never struggled in your life? No. Okay. Well, get out of your little privilege there. Stop calling me a snowflake.
Yeah.
And get out of
here.
Yeah.
Seriously. Role. Yeah. Exactly. That's. Yeah. Not,
I mean, it's very easy. It's very easy to be critical of people when it's very easy to be critical of issues if they do not directly affect you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Which to me was very heartening about the The people that showed up at airports around the travel executive order, it wasn't by a long shot. It was not people being that were going to be impacted by it.
Yeah, yeah.
There were people of every stripe. I was there. I saw with my own eyes people of every stripe at that protest.
Yeah.
All kind of people working and being present and doing lots of things, sometimes just showing up for it. Like, there was a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. And it was because it was became moral at that point. It became an issue of a moral choice, not just, does this impact me? No, fuck it. Which is, I think, an apathetic thing we've gotten into in the power structures that we exist in.
And that's where I think, that's where I still believe, despite all of our, you know, craziness right now and yelling and all that sort of stuff, where I do believe that this country and the people in this country are great, is that the majority of people are going to follow that path that you just described of going to help other people and doing what they can. There is a small percentage of people who are going to scream and yell,
yeah,
and make noise, especially now that we have social media, and they're going to sit, yeah, around and just be jerks. There's another percentage of people kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum who are super rich and just don't give a crap.
Mm-hmm.
But in between those two small, you know, slices, you have a large slice of people, some wealthy, some poor, some in the middle, who I think are really good people who want to do the best for others. And we may disagree on how to get there and whatever, but generally speaking, when the metal meets the rail, they're going to do it. And that's what I think makes the country great. And I think we're missing that because the two little slices on the ends are so damn noisy and powerful that it's kind of drowning out, or it's either drowning out the people in the middle, or it's kind of pulling people in the middle to one side or the other.
Yes. I also think, though, that there's some degree of socialized acceptance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that,
sure,
we just kind of like, well, this is the system we're in. How do, you know, I think there's, it's hard to conceive of how do we break an entire structure and completely change it,
yeah,
completely change the way it's formatted when it's been this way for so long.
Yeah, I guess in that big middle chunk, there is also a sizable chunk that doesn't know, like, who the president is right now, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
sure,
just so disconnected that they're, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't.
That doesn't mean they wouldn't be,
right,
a good person,
right,
and,
right,
save a person.
It,
like,
just means that they're,
if you were
kind
dying
of,
on the sidewalk.
Right. They're just kind of in cruise control, and for whatever reason, maybe they're just busy and they have complicated life. Who knows? But,
well, in particular, when we're talking about programs that serve, I think there's, like, a wide swath of people that feel like they're doing good because they're, you know, like doing that charity 5K or whatever, which,
right,
is not a bad thing to do. But,
sure,
I think it's kind of feeding a system because you can, to me, there's a difference between supporting an organization that's doing something perfectly good versus working to deal with the underlying cause. So that organization wouldn't even have to exist. And,
right,
I think we support organizations doing that without, we just keep bailing water out of the boat, but we're not patching the hole in it. You know, and I think that's where status quo can get a little tricky. I think, mm-hmm, sometimes we're so socialized to believe that this is the system, so I'm going to do good by just doing this one little thing, but it's only a thing that's like patching up the problem, not actually, you're not, you know, maybe you're giving a micro loan to somebody, which is great, and that maybe helps that person or something, or maybe you're helping somebody get on their feet after rehab or something, which is a great thing to do. But also it's important to take a look at the systemic reason why we have poverty or why, you know, addiction is, you know, hitting some people harder than others. Shit like that. I think, mm-hmm, we forget about addressing like the root of it and we just kind of deal with the leaves.
Yeah, I agree.
So, to make it about gardens.
Yes, I like that.
All right. Well, we are going over time, so we've got to get ourselves out of here. This has been another fine episode of Guth and Hupke on Politics. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.